Welcome to Maximum Geek. I'm Jeff Kervin.
And I'm Josh Curry. And tonight we have an all-Batman episode of Max Geek 4. Jeff and I have now both seen Batman Begins.
More bat than you can shake a stick at. And actually, shaking a stick at a bat, oddly entertaining.
Okay. First of all, I don't think you've ever actually shaken a stick at a bat. I'm going to challenge you to prove it. Prove it.
Well, I could get
you
them.
You don't have pictures.
No, but I could call the bat in to testify.
Talking bat? Hey, don't make farty noises and pretend like it's a bat. Hey, okay, stop. Just stop it now. Oh. We are way off topic. Okay, well, I was going to start out by talking a little bit about Batman in comics, but I'm afraid that won't go over well.
Yeah. Josh has the magical show notes. I have no idea where we're going.
Yeah, you know what? Even with the show notes, I don't have any idea where we're going. I hate to bring this to you. The show notes ain't as magical as you think. I haven't read the Batman... any of the Batman series for a while. The comic writing has kind of disappointed me. They do a lot more gimmicks and they do a lot of crossovers in the Batman titles that I just don't like dealing with. It's one of the reasons I don't like comics right now is they tend to do a lot of crossovers now. DC's really gotten that figured out where they have something that goes into a lot of regular series, but there are standalone miniseries you can read, and you don't have to go buy all this other stuff. Plus, we'll be collecting a lot of that. But with the Batman stuff, you know, they'll do all these direct continuation, and you have to read a title that you may not normally read. And for me, I read 30 titles. You know, I don't need them throwing new titles at me all the time. But right now, Judd Winnick is writing Batman, and he's an incredibly good writer. Not my favorite, but he's pretty good. Plus, there's something going on with the Red Hood, which is always one of the more interesting characters from Batman's history. I don't know, kind of interesting.
I thought the Red Hood was the Joker, or is that just within the confines of the Killing Joke?
No, he really was, but he came back and. I don't know everything that's gone on with him, but I've always thought that the fact that they brought him back, and it was the Joker for a while again, but now there's another Red Hood. But yeah, the Red Hood was originally the Joker, but it's kind of an interesting character that's kind of taken a life of... And then they were doing things like...
Well, if comics weren't so damn expensive, I might try that out and see how it, you know... But alas, comics are so damn expensive.
Not a cheap hobby. You'd have to, maybe if you're reading one or two titles, because, okay, $3 a month isn't that bad if you're only reading one title.
It depends on how much money you make. For me, it's
still
a stretch.
Anyway.
You're poor and stupid. Okay.
Say that. Going out of my way not to say that, damn it.
You were thinking it, though.
I would never think it. Maybe I would,
so anyway...
This has nothing to do with what I was trying to talk about. You evil, evil derailing
I have
back.
No idea what you were talking about.
The you're part just, of Mike will be played by Jeff this week.
You're just rambling for no apparent reason.
I'm apparent. That's enough of a reason. Anyway.
So anyway.
comics. I haven't been reading them lately, but Judd Winnick's writing, and that could really get me interested and get me back into them for a little while. Detective Comics, not so much. I mean, and the other thing is there's just so many Batman and Batman spinoff comics that I don't have the time for it. But Batman's always been one of my favorite characters. That's why I was really excited about Batman Begins, and just Batman Begins blew me away. Jeff kept telling me, and you know, being the evil taunting person he is, because while he has no money, he also has a very free-form sort of job. So he got to see Batman.
I thought the day it came out, I was there Wednesday, like a real fan, watching the movie, and then Josh, I'm just so busy, I have other things to do, didn't get around to seeing it until, what, Saturday?
Yes. But see, I have a daughter and a job. Two things you don't have.
excuses, that's all I'm hearing.
So, I just want to be clear. I tried to go see it, but I could not sneak out of work.
Ooh, I get a job. Ooh, they won't let me go see a movie. Ooh. I tried to drug my uncle, but he didn't drink the coffee. Ooh. You know, I mean, come on.
Actually, I did drug him, but he's been an alcoholic for so long, it had no effect. Oh. That was me.
Okay,
and Joey's going to listen to this.
Yeah, I was just saying, only one of our listeners actually got that joke, but that's okay, because Jody, we know you're out there. All right.
He'll either laugh or want to hurt me, or both. I mean, he is a little insane. So I couldn't sneak out of work to go see it, so I didn't get to see it until yesterday.
Plan.
It was kind of my Father's Day thing, because my wife had to work today, so my wife took me to see Batman. And she really loved it, which, you know, I'm blessed. What can I say?
It was arguably the best comics movie of all time.
There's no argument about it. It was
how could you not like it? Well, now, I'm going to, as much as I love the movie, it's been longer since I've seen it than it has since you've seen it. So the blush has kind of come off the rose a little bit, and I can look at it a little bit more objectively. Is this better than the 1980 Superman? Is this better than the 2002 Spider-Man?
Okay,
is this better than the 2005 Constantine? If this is better than all three of those movies, will it continue to hold the title after the Wachowskis do V for Vendetta this November? I don't know. But it's definitely the best Batman movie ever.
Well, let's address those one at a time. The 1980 Superman was incredible, and I actually watched it today because I was in that kind of nostalgia mood. And that's an incredible movie. But there are a few things.
Yeah, this movie didn't have a nice little hummable score.
No, it didn't. But there are a few problems I've always had with the Superman movie. I think the casting for Lois Lane is
going backwards
atrocious.
In time by spinning the Earth in the wrong way.
That was one of them. I'm only gonna list three of my problems. That's one of them. The casting for Lois Lane is number two, and number three is.
See, I had no problem with Margot Kidder as Lois Lane. She showed the requisite spunk. Lois doesn't take crap from anybody.
Oh, she just, I never liked her as Lois Lane. I've always thought she was poor cast. That's not a personal thing. And while I love Gene Hackman as Luthor, I don't love the way they wrote Luthor. And I don't love the fact that he wears a freaking wig throughout the whole movie. Because Gene Hackman refused to shave his head. He's not bald Gene Hackman wouldn't shave his head.
Again, I liked that because it showed a vain streak in Luthor that I thought really played into the character.
Well, depends on which Luthor you like best. Pre-crisis or post-crisis?
But anyway, getting back to Batman.
Other Luthor. Oh. Well, I was... No, but okay, well, anyway. As far as I'm concerned, it's the best comics movie. Spider-Man held the record up... Held that position up until now. Batman holds it now. I don't see anything. I think DC holds the title for now. We'll see about V for Vendetta.
Well, that's also a DC title.
I know.
That was published by DC.
But we'll see. I'm still kind of out on that one because I don't know how they're going to do. I love the story, but we'll see how they pull it off.
Come on, man. It's the Wachowski brothers. How can they screw this up? These are the same guys that brought us The Matrix. Come on.
Okay. I'm going to call for anyone who didn't like Matrix 2 and 3 to slap Jeff down on the forum. I did, so I'm not going to slap him down. But Jeff is in need of a little smacking. So if you did not think, if you don't think the Wachowskis can do no wrong, you know.
I didn't say they could do no wrong. I mean, yeah, if they killed a hooker and shoved her into the trunk. Oh, wait, no, was that part of Bound? Anyway.
Okay, well, there was a great lesbian sex scene in Bound. But you know what? That's about, you know, 15, 20 minutes in, and somehow I've never seen the rest of that movie. I own it.
Anyway.
But I've never seen the rest of it. Oh, anyway.
So let's get back to
totally off
Batman
topic.
Begins.
Batman Begins.
All right, first off, Batman himself, Christian Bale. This is the best, most multifaceted performance of Bruce Wayne and Batman I have ever seen. He really just completely nails the character. You get to see his vulnerability, which really none of the other... Keaton came close, but none of them sold the concept. Yeah, none of them sold the concept of Bruce Wayne the way Christian Bale does. He was just phenomenal. The only problem I had with his performance, he did a great job as Batman. In fact, in this one scene where one of the characters is talking to Batman while under the influence of the Scarecrow's fear gas, and you get to see what Batman looks like if you're really scared of him, that's freaking awesome. I'm not sure the voice was quite right. It was a little too... I mean, there's this one scene where he's interrogating somebody, holding them upside down. Yeah, a fat guy holding him upside down by a line from a rooftop, which was taken almost shot for shot straight out of a scene from The Dark Knight. And yeah, he's just barking at the guy and shouting at him. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, I could definitely... You know, Batman's an angry guy. And as Bale has pointed out in interviews, the cowl was a little tight. It gave him a headache, which he used that headache, that pain, to kind of channel into Batman just being really, really angry and irritable. An off-kilter bat. But... I don't know. It still seemed too pro wrestler for me. I don't know. What did you think of the voice, Josh?
My biggest problem was it didn't feel consistent enough for me. Wasn't how to say when you know for one-liners and short stuff it was great. But when he started talking, it just didn't feel like a consistently strong voice. Now, I love that it's a different voice than his Bruce Wayne voice, which is...
Yeah.
He went very far to do that. I mean...
Of course, the one person that he talked to that actually would have recognized the Bruce Wayne voice, he went ahead and blew his identity anyway.
Yeah. Well, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Although I love the way that he did it, you know, when he did blow his identity to that character, it was actually a fairly poignant moment, in the film.
Yeah, and he did it in a good way, It wasn't like I'm Bruce Wayne. He didn't say I'm Batman.
Yeah.
Well, I did say I'm Batman, but he did that very well. But there wasn't a consistency to that voice for lines like I'm Batman. You know, it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was great.
It worked out
really
well. Yeah.
But you know, it definitely needs a little improvement. But it was good. I don't think it was bad necessarily, but I think it could have been better. I think his portrayal of the two characters of Batman as two characters was dead on. The only actor I've ever seen more capable of that kind of duality is Christopher Reeve, because having watch the 1980 Superman again, you really see
There's a big difference between Superman and Clark.
There's the scene right after he's revealed, you know, right after he's talking to Lois, and, you know, there's the whole paint, oh, what color are my panties scene on the balcony, and after they fly, you know, Clark comes in. And he's standing there, and she goes off to change, and he takes off his glasses and stands up straight, and it's a whole different guy. And he just does this really subtle transition back and forth, and I don't think we've ever seen that kind of subtlety with the Batman character, but Christian Bale really gives it, it makes it two characters. He doesn't have to be as dramatic as those differences because he's got a cowl to hide himself. The personalities are there, and he really portrays those two personalities very well. So it's not, you know, it's not such a physical change, it's more of an emotional change, and he handles it extremely well. He sells, you know, and I think it's really interesting that it's very natural for him to be Batman, but it's not natural for him to be Bruce Wayne. He doesn't know how to be Bruce Wayne. He doesn't know how to be this billionaire playboy.
And that actually leads to probably Katie Holmes' best line in the movie. But I'm not going to give away what the line is, because I thought that scene actually worked really well, and it's worth seeing fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's excellent. He's got those two roles down excellently. Christian Bale, I'm glad he signed on for two more movies. This is, you know, unlike when they were signing, you know, if Michael Keaton had done three Batman movies, who knows what would have happened. We might have ended up with three watchable Batman movies instead of just two. Prior to Batman Begins, you know, we might have ended up, you know, as much as I like Val Kilmer, and I think he got Bruce Wayne down, he got Batman down fairly well, he didn't do Bruce Wayne very well at all, you know,
I just cannot reconcile myself to the fact that the Val Kilmer in Batman Forever and the Val Kilmer in Tombstone are the same guy.
Well, you know what? I don't blame that on Val Kilmer. I blame that on the director and the writers. With an actor like Val Kilmer, the director gets the performance he wants.
I think it's safe to assume that Joel Schumacher will never be allowed anywhere near Batman ever again.
Oh, he better not. okay. So Christian Bale, dead on.
I think as long as we get that straight. Yeah, he was dead on.
The rest of the cast of this movie was the casting and the writing.
Oh yeah, the casting
was so Batman.
Let's talk a little bit about the rest of the cast. Katie Holmes, everybody knows about because of the whole, Tom Cruise.
She still looks 15 and can't act her way out of a paper bag.
I think she could act her way out of a paper bag, provided you got it slightly damp first.
Horrible.
She's not bad in this movie. She's just miscast. I was talking to my dad about this earlier, and he absolutely loved the film. He thought it was one of the best movies he's, you know, superhero or otherwise, he's ever seen. My dad said that he walked out of Batman Begins at the end of the movie. He walked out of the theater just completely in awe, and he could not remember the last time he felt that way after watching a film. When we were talking about Katie Holmes' character, Rachel Dawes, who's not only a childhood friend and confidant of Bruce Wayne, but also a hard-hitting, take-no-prisoners assistant district attorney, he suggested that the three actresses I know that were up for the role were Katie Holmes, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Natalie Portman. Of the three, Portman has the acting chops. I don't know what, but I think there was a conflict between this and another film she was doing, something with lightsabers. I don't know. But the suggestion my dad had was Jennifer Garner, and I think she probably would have been a much better choice for that role.
Well,
I don't know if she was busy doing Elektra
there
at that time.
We have a big disagreement there, because I don't think so. We're just going to have to agree to disagree on that one. I think she's an atrocious actor, and I can't stand her.
Talking about Garner here?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think
wow.
Katie Holmes
okay, so
is
moving on
good an actress.
I think the final line on Katie Holmes is she's not a great actress, but fortunately she doesn't have a whole lot to do with the story, and she doesn't detract much from the film.
I guess my bottom line is
she's not great, but she doesn't get in the way.
I always see joy from Dawson's Creek, and everything she does is joy from Dawson's Creek. And unfortunately, she was really good
Dawson's
in that
Creek,
part.
Not a single episode.
But every part she does is that part. She's not got any range. You know, she played.
Here's my point, though. Was she better than Kim Basinger in the original Batman?
Okay, dude, a sock puppet is better than Kim
pretty
Basinger.
She pretty much have to be, wouldn't she? Okay.
And Kim Basinger
isn't get her
out
actor. Of the way.
Okay. And Kim Basinger
is
a bad actor.
Let's get the cute little Scientologist out of the way and talk about the rest of the cast.
Let's talk
first
about
up, Gary Oldman as Jim Gordon.
What I was going to say.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Looked like he was plucked straight from Mazzucchelli's Batman Year One. I mean, he had the bushy mustache, perfect. He's an excellent actor. The only complaint I had about him, and then I'll finally let Josh talk, the only complaint I had about him is that he didn't have enough screen time. I wish I'd seen more.
Yeah, I definitely wish I'd seen more, but Gary Oldman is, he's probably one of the best actors in the film. In film in general.
One
Gary
of the best
Oldman
actors
is an incredible
in Hollywood.
Actor. In film in general. See, that's broader than Hollywood. He has a lot of range.
That includes all of those Bollywood films in India. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's no kissing. And really, without kissing, how can you make a movie? That has nothing to do with anything. But he is an incredible actor, and he got Jim Gordon down, and I think this will be a great relationship to watch expand over three movies, because
you know that Oldman's going to have a much bigger role in the second movie because of the last scene of this movie.
There's a lot of setup,
but
here.
Is Oldman signed on for all three, just like Bale is?
I can't remember whether he contracted or not. I think he is, but being Gary Oldman, I don't know. And Morgan Freeman, I know they're willing to do more films as long as there's a good script.
Yeah.
Speaking of Morgan Freeman, let's talk about him next.
Lucius Fox.
He is also an incredibly good actor. His character,
refresh my memory. In the comics, was Lucius Fox that close a confidant to Bruce Wayne like he is in this movie?
Not that I recall.
I do recall the character showing up in the comics, but I wasn't really clear on the relationship. In this movie,
I don't remember him being this close.
He functions as kind of Batman's Q. He's an employee of Wayne Industries or Wayne Enterprises, whatever it is. And he runs their military R&D department. And Bruce goes down there asking to see some stuff that he's going to use for spelunking what's the term for jumping off a building with a parachute?
Base jumping.
Yeah. And of course, yeah. Morgan Freeman's not an idiot. He can kind of read between the lines. As he says at one point in the film, if you don't tell me what you're doing when I'm asked, I don't have to lie.
That is one of my favorite lines. That and didn't you get the memo?
Yeah. Look for that one when you go see the film. That's definitely a great line.
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, he just adds so much warmth to the picture, which you really, by that point needed.
It's amazing because, you know, Morgan Freeman...
It's kind of a depressing situation.
Morgan Freeman doesn't, you know, he's not like technological kind of guy, but he brings up this techno babble and he talks about this technology and he delivers it so well you would never know. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you just...
He's saying, and that's, as far as that's he's something he's that, saying, you know, he's talking about flux capacity, you know.
But it still works. And that's something, you know, we'll sidetrack here and then come back to the cast, but one of the things Nolan wanted to do with this film, Chris Nolan, the guy that directed the movie, wanted to do with this was he wanted a Batman that was as much as possible grounded in reality. And they managed to do with this film what I have never seen done. Not in a movie, not in the comics, nowhere. They made a Batman that made complete, perfect, rational sense. Everything about him, his body armor, the cowl, the cape, the weird little protrusions on his gloves, the Batmobile, all of it. In the context of the movie, you end up going, well, of course, he has to dress up like a bat. There's just no other way to do this.
Which, you know, and my big thing here is I've never seen anyone get it so well. I mean, that's... For those of us who have been reading the comics for years, we understand that. We know that. That's just, for me, I know that's why he's Batman. I don't have to question it. I know why he's Batman. I've never seen it shown in any medium as well as it was here. They show why
he's Batman. This is a Batman movie that... This is a Batman movie that my mother, who is in no sense a comics fan, and who generally does not like comics movies, this is a movie where even she would go, well, yeah, that makes sense. And she can identify with Batman, and she can feel empathy for Bruce Wayne. This is not, you know, I saw another review somewhere that said this, and I'll steal from the best. This is not a comic book movie. This is an action drama superbly done that happens to use a comic book character as its subject.
Yeah, I mean, my wife saw it with me, and she's not a big comic fan by any stretch of the imagination. And the only question she had, and she always has questions when I see movies with her, the only questions she had were, well, is that straight from the comic? You know? You know, she asked about how true it was to the comic, but there were no... The story, she got the story without a problem. And, you know, a lot of times with movies like this, it's... No, dear, here, let me explain.
Well, there's a very fine line between making a movie that's accessible to the general public and making a movie that will appeal to the, you know, to the comic book fans, the purists. What Nolan has done with this is made both movies at the same time.
Yeah, and it's an amazing job. He's done an amazing job.
Absolutely fantastic. Let's get back to the cast.
Yeah. Let's talk about
Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, Rutger Hauer, who has a fairly small part, but it's an important part. But it's fairly small.
Yeah, he's the CEO of Wayne Industries, and there's a subplot going on there that's shows another side of Bruce Wayne that we really never saw in any of the other movies. The Bruce Wayne, the savvy, shrewd businessman. The kind of gentleman's combat going on between him and Hauer is a really entertaining subplot, and it's a lot of fun to see. That's definitely, it's a small role, but it's an important one.
Yeah, and it's very important for the character of Bruce Wayne more than anything. It teaches us a lot about Bruce Wayne rather than
As great as everybody else was in this film, we've left somebody out. And he may be every bit as good as performances go, and every bit as crucial to the film as Christian Bale himself. And that's Michael Caine as Alfred. I had my doubts when I first heard that Michael Caine had been cast. Basically thinking of him in the Austin Powers 3. But I gotta say, as much as I liked Michael Goh in the original movies, Michael Caine is the best Alfred I have ever seen. This is... He just flat out nailed it.
He is
really
incredible.
You really get the feeling that he you get the feeling that Alfred legitimately loves Bruce and will do anything to protect Bruce, but at the same time, he's the Batman's Batman. He's the guy who helps Bruce design the costume and order the parts for the cowl. Which they show several times. The ears actually house very sensitive directional microphones, so the bat ears actually help him hear, from far away, which is a cool idea that I've never seen in the comics. But you really get a strong sense of connection and bond between Alfred and Bruce, which is something that the other movies kind of lacked.
Yeah, I agree. He's incredible. I was really mad when I saw that they were going with Michael Caine. I thought the only strong performance that went through all four of the original films was Alfred. And, Gordon and Alfred were the only two that were in all four of the original films. Same actors. But Michael Caine he got it. He gets Alfred, and that was amazing. And the interaction there was impressive, and that really lends a lot to that relationship. That sells it. All the characters in this movie, the characters are what are the understanding Goyer and Nolan have for these characters, and are either able to impart to the actors or found actors who already got it, is amazing.
Well, let's talk about Goyer in the script. Now, Josh, you know more about Goyer than I do, so why don't you run down his background?
He's done a lot of comic book movies. He's done a lot of writing. His first comic book movie was Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. for television. We won't hold that against him, though. He had nothing to do with casting David Hasselhoff. I will not refuse to hold Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. against him. He's a geek. He is a comic fan. And he said, you know what? There's this great material out there. There's Blade. Let's make a movie. And he said, you know what, we can do Blade and I can make it better because no one knows. No one knows anything about Blade. And for a long time, Blade was, for me, the pinnacle of comic book films. Not because it was
Blade
true
was
to, the
very good.
To the source material. It was very far off from the source material. The original Blade character was not half man, half vampire. He was not this half-breed. He wasn't a daywalker. He was just a guy. With a fro. seriously. But he had an attitude, and Goyer took that and he made a very good film. And it's kind of interesting to see him grow through the Blade movies over the years, and eventually, we get to modern day where he's done Blade Trinity, which got a really bad rap, and I'm going to have to disagree with
personally.
That. I thought it was great. I know another movie he did that I really loved. He did The Puppet Masters. He did the screenplay for The Puppet Masters, which is, funny thing is, I saw it on cable today. I saw a lot of movies today on cable, just either all of them or part of them, that tied into what we're watching, to what we're talking about here. But I saw The Puppet Masters, which is, based on a Heinlein novel, and it's really... It's really, I think it's really good. It's got Donald Sutherland, and he's a good actor in it. and it's just, but that's one of his earlier films. But Goyer back to Blade Trinity. Goyer did Blade Trinity, and watching it, I really liked it. I thought it was one of the, I thought it was better than the second Blade movie. But that's just me. So and he's just become really strong as far as comic book film writers go.
Now, originally, Goyer didn't want to do the script for Batman, is that correct?
That is very correct. Goyer was a little afraid to write Batman. It's a big thing. I mean, he wrote Blade, but Blade is this, you know, off-the-wall character nobody's heard of. Nick Fury. Aren't a whole lot of Nick Fury fans out there. I mean, you know, he hasn't really tackled, and he'd already agreed to write Ghost Rider when he took on Batman Begins. So he kind of had this history of working with Marvel characters, A, and with these lesser-known characters. And, you know, for a lot of people, DC is still the big time. I mean, you know, whatever your personal opinion is, for a lot of writers, DC still has the biggest characters, Batman and Superman. Writing for DC... and for a lot of people has a lot of meaning. And it's kind of scary, especially writing Batman.
Well, bats and soups have been around since the 30s. I mean, they go back a lot further I mean, yeah, kids in Somalia understand the Superman symbol. They know, you know, the Batman symbol. These are modern day myths. Everybody knows these characters. So
yeah.
Having to write about them is the big time, yeah.
You know, it's a little daunting, and but he took it on, and I'm really glad he did. Goyer is very gifted at this kind of scripting. I'm more than ever convinced that he is a screenwriter who knows the difference between being a screenwriter and a director, and he talks about it in the in the behind the scenes stuff for Blade Trinity because he wrote and directed it. And so he has even a better understanding. But he writes a script, and then he gives it to the director and gets out of the way. If they need rewrites, then he rewrites. But he understands, as far as the screenplay goes, he understands what his job is, and he writes a good one, and he turns it. And, you know, and he stays as close to the project as he can.
This is by far the best dialogue of any comics movie I think I've ever seen.
The dialogue isn't campy, it feels real, it doesn't feel like a comic book movie. You don't come out of it going, I just saw Batman. You know, and for me, the only thing I liked about Batman and Robin were the opening 5 minutes, because it was over the top and it was comic booky. I was young, I was stupid.
I've never seen Batman and Robin, so I haven't.
I was young, I was stupid, and bottom line is, this is so much better. Walking out of it, not going, oh, I saw a pretty cool action kind of sci-fi movie. All right. Was much nicer for me. But I can't say enough good things about Goyer. Really excited about his next two projects, because Ghost Rider with Nick Cage is going to be awesome. It's not going to, I don't think it's going to take the crown from Batman Begins. And then after that, he's doing The Flash.
This does set an absurdly high bar.
He's doing The Flash, and that may be the only thing...
The Flash, I'm really looking forward to, but again, how do you top Batman? I mean, at this point, Bryan Singer has got a mountain in front of him. This is, with all due respect to The Flash, I know he's your favorite comics character, but he's no Batman.
It's a personal thing, but I'm going to tell you that unless Goyer really screws something up, you know, it's going to be hard to top The Flash
After looking at the armor in the, you know, that Bruce wears in this movie, and again, the bat suit makes completely perfect sense in the context of the movie. There's nothing else he could have worn. But after seeing this, the red tights that they got going on, you know, the red underpants over the blue tights that they've got going on in the new Superman movie look dumber than ever.
Okay, well, just I
would not
want to
be
now.
In Bryan Singer's shoe. I would not want to be in Bryan Singer's shoes right now. He's got a giant mountain ahead of him if he thinks he's going to top this.
Well, I don't know whether he can top it or not. However, I think you're writing a little bit of euphoria. Although you haven't been excited about the Superman movie since at any point we've talked about it. I don't think you've really been excited about it as excited as I am. I think you think that the 1980 Superman can never be beat.
It's tough.
And I think you take it a little personally.
That's a vision of that character. I really am not sure you can do better.
Well, and in your opinion,
let's keep talking about this movie, though.
I'm not the one who took us off topic. You don't get to take us off topic.
Batmobile.
Slap me around, and then come back like, oh, well, let's get back on topic. No. Don't pull a gecko.
Let's talk about the Batmo tank.
Okay, that's fine. That's it. Just remember, in a year, after we see Superman, remember how stupid you are, okay? Just want you to remember that. Okay, the Batmobile. You're right, we need to move along. Let's talk to the director real quick. Chris Nolan.
Okay.
I was a little worried because he hasn't done pure action. He's done Memento, he's done Insomnia, a few other things, but those are his big things. Insomnia... Well, it was a cure for it. Memento I loved. I loved Memento, and there was some action there. But I was a little worried about something this big. He had two incredible actors in Insomnia, and yet this movie was just... But he wrote that. And he's definitely a better director than he is a writer. Although Memento was incredible, so, you know, back and forth there. But Chris Nolan did an excellent job. He really gets the characters.
The driving force behind keeping everything grounded solidly in reality. He's the guy who wanted there to be a legitimate, practical reason for everything. And he found them.
Like the Batmobile. A lot of times you'll see the sports car Batmobile, which is what it's kind of classically
I have seen some reviews that have actually dinged this movie for not having a sports car Batmobile. And I gotta say, what are you smoking? Yeah, they're... Batman is a warrior. He's going to drive a military vehicle. And this version of the Batmobile is definitely a weapon in its own right.
It's awesome. The Batmobile is incredible. From the first pictures I saw, I was kind of worried at first. It grew on me. I think that's one of the reasons they leaked it first. When the Batman Begins sight went up, the only thing on it were two pictures of the Batmobile. I think it was so people would get used to it. And I think it was a smart move because otherwise it might have been a little jarring. But I'll tell you what, the Batmobile is incredible.
It kind of harkens back to The Dark Knight Returns and that big tank that Bats was driving in that one.
The Batmobile is just
fast,
incredible.
It's mean. It can drive right through concrete barricades, which I've never seen a Ferrari do successfully. It was just fantastic.
There's two more characters I want to talk about.
And it can jump. Yeah, let's talk villains.
I wasn't going to tell people about the jumping. I was kind of... villains. We got two villains, and I'll tell you what, let's talk about Scarecrow first. Cillian Murphy.
Creepiest
had no idea who
Batman
he was.
Villain ever.
Going in, I was like, Cillian who? Well, okay, I hope he's good. But you know what? Scarecrow has always
fantastic.
Been kind of goofy. He's always been a goofy character. He's not been this incredible... really believable.
Murphy managed to bring
super scary But you know what?
Yeah, Murphy managed to bring a real sense of menace to the Scarecrow, which I don't think he ever really had in the comics.
He was really... You see why he's creepy and scary and... you know, he's a bad guy. Not just a loon.
And quite possibly insane in his own right, yeah. I mean...
I don't want to give anything away, but yeah, he's insane.
I would love to see this character come back in later movies, and they left the door open for that. Left a lot of doors open, particularly in the one building in town that you probably shouldn't be opening doors.
But ooh, I like.
You'll get that after you see the movie.
The end of the movie, the way the movie ends, is an excellent setup for future movies, and gives you a real solid start, not just for the next movie, but for however many movies they want to do. Cillian Murphy was excellent.
And the special effects used for what people see when his fear gas is being used, again, were fantastic. You go from this kind of goofy-looking scarecrow burlap mask, but then once he hits you with the gas, there's maggots writhing out of it, and it's just, okay, get away from me, thank you, okay.
Let's talk about Ra's al Ghul. Very well used. Yeah, let's...
Ra's al Ghul was fantastic.
From the comics, one of my favorite villains.
Exactly what I wanted to see. Not necessarily what I expected, but what I wanted to see. And Josh knows what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But let me talk a little bit about Ra's came across in general.
We're not going to spoil the surprise.
Yeah, but would you like... Okay. Hey!
Okay.
I'm trying to talk about him. Okay. From the comics... Ra's al Ghul, the most important thing about him is he's not bent on world domination, he's not bent on destruction, he is out to make the world a better place. He is out...
From his perspective.
Well, to reform the world in his image. So he's one of the better villains that's always... You know, you can see why he thinks that. You can see why he does what he does, and that makes him all the better as a villain.
Ra's al Ghul has always been intriguing because he sees himself as a good guy, and he almost convinces you that he's a good guy. It comes across perfectly in this movie. The acting
and the
is
way
eloquent.
They tie all these characters together.
That's something else. Is that this is also probably the first multi-villain movie I think I've ever seen where it didn't seem forced to have the multiple villains. There's actually three bad guys in this movie. There's Ra's al Ghul. There's the Scarecrow. And then there's the mob boss that kind of runs everything in Gotham. And it all fits together like a jigsaw puzzle. It makes perfect sense.
And I love that. That was probably, that's one of the real strengths of this movie. This isn't a perfect movie. Okay, I'll go out, I'm going on a limb, it's not a perfect movie. But you know what? The few problems I had with it... Yes. The few problems I had with it don't stick out in my mind. They really don't. When I think about the movie, I don't think about the problems I had with it.
No, you still walk out of the theater trying desperately to hum the theme, only to realize it doesn't have a hummable theme.
I walked out of the theater going, wow, sequel. Okay, who are we getting back? That's what I walked out of the theater doing.
You want to turn around, walk back into the theater, and see the sequel right now.
And I really hope they get him back. I mean, the bottom line is, I don't know how they could have done a better origin movie for Batman. What they could have done to make it better.
Something that I think we need to cover is that, and this is something that I will be in awe of David Goyer until my dying day.
Okay.
How in the world did he manage to write an origin story that doesn't leave you feeling, okay, get on with it? I mean, even all of the background stuff is interesting, and you're like into it, and you're like, oh, that's why this looks the way it does, or that's why he acts that way. I mean, at the very beginning, the first time you see Bruce in the movie, yeah, okay, spoiler alert, but I'm spoiling the first 5 minutes. Get over it. The first time you see him, he's in this, he's in a prison, like up in Tibet or somewhere. And, he gets this mean look from this big guy, and, then they go out to they go out for their breakfast gruel, and the old guy, who shares his cell, warns him that somebody's going to try to start a fight, and he's like, can't they start a fight after I eat? And the guy, the big guy jumps him, and he gets into this fight, at one point he refers to, Josh, what did the big guy call himself? It's like, I'm death, or I'm something, or,
I don't remember
the now. The big guy called himself something that he thought would be intimidating, and Bruce says, no, you're practice. And then commences to kicking like six guys' asses simultaneously. The guards drag him away and said, you're going to solitary. And he says, why? Protection. I don't need protection. And the guards turn around and point at all the unconscious guys in the dirt and said, protection for them.
I love that line.
I mean, Bruce is a badass from the very beginning, and you just love watching his evolution, watching the process that makes him Batman. Something else that I want to bring up about this, there are several flashbacks in this movie that tell the story of, important events in his life before he ended up in this Tibetan prison. And this has got to be the most graceful handling of flashbacks I think I have ever seen. Nolan did a fantastic job being able to tell this story in non-linear order, having everything flow, and not jarring the audience.
Yeah, it was amazing. Okay, I gotta go see it again.
So,
is there a midnight showing somewhere?
Alright, so I think that's going to wrap up our Batman Begins talk. I can't think of anything else we need to discuss. Although Hans Zimmer's score, excellent. So
yeah,
I'll probably be picking that up on CD at some point.
The only other thing I want to talk about is Batman Begins tie-in merchandise. Most of it's crap. So you know. Just like every other Batman movie, there's like...
Oh, come on,
Batman,
the little candy with the Batman puppet on the top of it? Come on.
There's Batman, Laser Gauntlet Batman, that has nothing to do with the movie. I mean, there's a lot of lame Batman movie tie-ins, action figure-wise. There's one thing I've found that if anybody wants to buy me for Father's Day, my wife's already bought me all the presents. If you want to send it to me for Father's Day or just because you like me, it's $195. It's a hand-painted, cold-cast porcelain statue. And it's a limited run of 4,000, and it's incredible. There will be a link to it in the show notes.
It is
so
the coolest Batman statuette I think I've ever seen. It is...
It is incredible. It's very,
very
cool.
It is very, very slick. And again, you look at this, and this is the, for many people, looking at this statue, this is the first time you really get a good look at the Batsuit. Because in the movie, Batman's a ninja, okay? He's trained as a ninja. And he acts like one. He strikes fast and then immediately disappears back into the blackness, leaving the crooks, soiling their pants. Nolan did a fantastic job with... What?
Go ahead.
I've seen several people say that, like Fred Astaire, who demanded that, he be shot only in wide angle so you can see his whole body moving. I think that the close-in camera work and the kind of jarring, disjointed, combat in this movie actually work to the movie's advantage, because you shouldn't get a good look at Batman when he's trying to kick somebody's ass. It's all about strike fast and disappear.
See, I've never liked too much of that, and it's one of the problems I had, was it felt like there was just too much close-up action, camera work during the action scene. I always like to get a better feel for the combat.
I think it would have looked lame if they had pulled back and done a wide action, because as cool as Christian Bale looks in the bat suit, he can't move real fast.
No, but it could have. I'm not saying it needed to be done all, but there it could have been done clearer. It could have been. That is one of my complaints. The action sequences are a little jumbled. And it's not necessarily the close-in action, although it is a little close at times. And there's a happy medium there, I think. I agree. I don't think they can really pull all the way back and let you see, because, frankly, the nature of the costume that he has to wear in the movie doesn't lend itself to that. Yeah, I mean, and I understand that, but
although,
I know there's an in-between, and, oh, yeah.
By far the best cape of any Batman movie.
It's thin and flowing and works the way it's supposed to. As for tie-ins to the movie, there's a line of porcelain statues and things like that, and some of them are very nice. But those are the only worthwhile tie-ins I've seen to Batman, unless you're a kid. I mean, little kids love this stuff, and I know that's who they really make them for. But, you know, me, I like to buy action figures.
Yeah, they're really not expecting a guy who's, like, pushing 30 with a daughter of his own running into the toy store going, "Ooh, look!"
Well, then they're missing a big market.
Although you do.
They're missing a big market, because a lot of people who buy toys aren't kids. Okay? I am representative of a big portion of the action figure and toy buying market. Screw them hippies. Anyway, I think that's all we wanted to cover. I can't think of anything. Oh, I want to go back to our first topic, Batman in comics. I finally remember what's going on with the Red Hood, I think. A lot going on. Part of this was I don't know. I haven't been reading
Josh?
It, so never mind. Forget it. Hello?
Okay. Yeah, you cut out for a minute there. I don't know if that.
Oh.
I don't know if that was a dramatic pause or if you just or if you actually did cut out. But anyway.
No, but the bottom line is I can't remember enough of the details.
That's what makes
this
Maximum Geek, our high technical values.
Shut up. Anyway, there's a lot going on in the. Anyway, let's forget I said anything about Batman comics again, because I don't know where I was going with that. Jeff has derailed me. I blame it all on Jeff.
So, bottom line, if you haven't seen Batman Begins, you better be listening to this podcast en route to the theater. This is a must-see. This is... forget Sith, man. This is the must-see of the summer. If you see no other movie, see this
Sith.
One.
I'm not going to say forget Sith. Might have to disagree with you there. There was far more, for me, there was far more emotional impact from Sith. Although,
you're a Star
the dialogue
Wars geek,
is
though.
Definitely
I mean...
better in Batman Begins. I will admit, dialogue is definitely better
almost
in Batman Begins. And as far as writers go, Goyer is the very high
bomb.
On milestone writers. I was a little worried when I first heard he was doing the...
He's one of my all-time favorite screenwriters now. He's up there with Goldman and Sorkin. And this guy is just fantastic. Go see the movie. Then go to Maximum Geek. Solomedia.com/podcast. And let us know what you think. Then go see the movie again.
There's also a link to my ravingmedia.info review of it, and so let us know.
Which has an interesting poll.
Yeah. That'll do it for the 30th episode of Max Geek.
Woohoo! The big 3-0. We'll talk to you.